is my pleasure to present...
Good morning and welcome to the Carmichael Dave Show, starring Carmichael Dave, Jay Mars, and your phone calls on the Fire Wings hotline at 1-800-920-1140. Text in on the Jiffy Loop text line at 44-1140. Now, strap in and sit down. Here's Carmichael Dave.
Joining us right now, a guy who's been extremely busy. He goes straight from being the architect of the offseason for your Sacramento Kings to talking to us right now on the phone, the one, the only, Monty McNair, general manager of your Sacramento Kings. Monty, it's Dave. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like we've been kind of teleporting in time here, right? We went from like what should have been like June 22nd to July 10th, and now we're like in early October. All in a matter of like days. So it's been a crazy year, crazy off season, but we are excited to see the team on the floor here, hopefully soon.
Well, let's start with that. And I'm sure the whole interview could be taken up with this question, but just top of your head, this is your first, you've been around the game forever. It's your first shot in the big chair, if you will. And boy, what a year you picked. So when it comes to this truncated, is an understatement, off season, what is it that really sticks out to you crazy different as opposed to if this was a normal season?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things that, you know, for at least me and my group in particular, that's different. You know, I think the obvious one is the compressed time frame and just going from one thing to another without the normal gaps in there to prepare. But then adding on top of that, obviously my first time in, like you said, in the captain's chair, and then also trying to get a new group together. We got four or five new faces, trying to fold in together. And then on top of that, all of this in the middle of a pandemic. So, it's certainly been crazy. It feels like, we kind of hit the simulate off season button in NBA 2K or something.
Right.
I do think, like, credit to our staff. They've been incredible, both the guys that were already here that have done great work, and as well as the new faces that I brought in. And, I think we're excited for where things are at and ready to see what they look like actually on the floor here.
So last time we talked was obviously another whirlwind for you. You had been brought on as the new GM. You were talking to all the media, just kind of hadn't even come close to settling in yet. So between then and between now, has it just been this tornado of scouting reports and draft work and free agent work? I mean, really, what has your life been like? What is it, the last month or so?
Yeah, no, it's been it's been one thing after another. In Houston, we didn't have a draft pick, so and we were in the middle of the playoffs in the bubble, and so most of my focus was on that. And starting here, and we have the 12th pick and 3 second rounders. So just diving in to all the reports and watching video and trying to get up to speed on what the pandemic offseason was going to look like for the draft. And then, just a few days later, the free agency period opens. So, it's been a whirlwind, but it's also been, everything that we've done is pretty much something that we're all used to. It's just a little different, a little faster, but, I think our group was well prepared and, I think hopefully we came out of it, in a good spot.
Monty, when we talked originally, I told you I'm a huge fan of Daryl Morey's, and we became friends when he acquired Ron Artest out of here. And, I like him. I love him as a GM. I dig him as a person. And I was reading a Reddit he did the other day, one of those Ask Me Anythings. And the first question involved you. And did he call it, I think, the Monty McNair principle? But it wasn't the first time he'd spoken about this, because I remember reading about this. I think he said something at the Sloan conference. But the idea of it was basically you've got people in fantasy leagues that will, I'm going to trade my I want your three awesome guys and I'm going to give you my three scrubs. And boy, does that sound great. And trades never go anywhere. And your philosophy, if I'm getting it right, was put yourself in the shoes of the other team. But work the trade out that way, role play it on either side before you even offer it. Is that something that you still, I would assume, very much adhere to?
Yeah, I mean, it's I like that Daryl's giving me credit. I don't think this is anything groundbreaking, but not to get too nerdy, but you know, I think we all suffer from, you know, the endowment effect of overvaluing something you have and conversely undervaluing something that's not in your possession. It's certainly a huge thing in basketball and trades. And so a lot of what we do is try to remove that by just reversing the trade. If we, you know, they're offering player A for player B and you're like, I don't know. But if you flipped it and you said, well, if we had player B, would we trade for player A? And you're like, well, we would, you know, there's no way we would do that. That kind of gives you a better perspective on the deal. And so you try to look at it from both angles, like you said, so that you at least remove as much as you can of those biases. Otherwise, yeah, I think most teams, it's just a natural thing that people suffer from. And to make better decisions, we try to eliminate it if we can.
All right, and then before we get into the specifics of the offseason, you said you don't want to get too nerdy. Too late here. I'm going to ask you a nerdy-based question. we were talking about this the other morning on the show. So current or former Kings, Frank Mason, Chris Webber, Harry Giles, Glenn Robinson, your newest signing, Ben McLemore, Frank Kaminsky, Marvin Bagley, they all have something in common other than being NBA players or current or ex-Kings. They're all thirds. They're all thirds. They're all Marvin Bagley the third or Glenn Robinson the third. And we were trying to figure out, is there actually a record kept somewhere where you can research based on thirds that have been or are currently in the league? Because I got to think the Kings are very close to, if not breaking the record, for the most players on their roster that were thirds. So you basically helped invent, this is my mind now, you talked about overvaluing your guys. I value you tremendously. So in my mind, you helped invent analytics in every computer program ever. Do you think there's a way somewhere out there where we would be able to search and find out if we have broken the record for most thirds on a roster?
I told you I wasn't going to get into any of our state secrets, but you already figured one out.
I knew it.
So, and shout out as well to one of our scouts, former NBA player and college star AC Law the Fourth.
Yes.
As many Roman numerals as you can get after your name is a huge indicator for success. But no, that is funny. I had not even noticed that. I think Robert Woodard is the second.
Okay.
So you know he's almost there. I guess we'll have to draft his son
right
at some point down the line.
You know, one of the guys on there. This is a tough question to ask you. I'm being serious now because I know this is where things get a little bit sticky. You're aware of the bond that Harry Giles, who, by the way, was a third, had with the community. And one of the real talking points throughout the season, Monty, was because the Kings and your previous regime there didn't pick up the option, there was a limitation, there was a handcuff to what could be offered to Harry. So all year long, the idea or the question was, well, when the time comes, will the Kings, you know, will his market rate be there? Could they offer him an amount to keep him? And when we found out what he got with Portland, it looks like, unless I'm missing something, that there was the ability to retain him at least financially, but there was something else there. And I would never ask you to disparage former player. I would never ask you to spill state secrets. But if you wouldn't mind helping us close the book on Harry, was it just simply maybe a playing time thing, a camp thing? He felt he'd do better somewhere else thing. We just kind of wanted to close the book on Harry with the Kings and how that separation really occurred.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Harry certainly a fan favorite and, you know, I think did some really good things here in Sacramento. You know, for us, we evaluated him along with the rest of the free agent class, and he's certainly a talent. And you know, we wish him the best in Portland. But ultimately, how things shook out, you know, we were excited to add the guys we did, especially you know Hassan brings I think just a different dimension. You know, at the center spot, at the big man spot, and so you know, obviously, thank Harry for all he did and. Mm-hmm. And I know the Sacramento fans love him, but, you know, ultimately we just ended up going a different direction.
Monty McNair with us. Monty, I am curious again. State secrets are a thing. I get it. But if you wouldn't mind even just being non-specific, macro and not micro, where was Tyrese Halliburton on your big board? And did you have any indication that he'd slip to you at 12?
Yeah, Tyrese, you know, I think one of the top talents in the draft. I think fair to say we had him well above 12 on our board. I think for us, he checks a lot of the boxes for how we want to build this team and how we want to play. His versatility on both ends. I think he can shoot and pass and handle. He can even offensive rebound on the offensive end. And then defensively, he can guard multiple positions. Great activity. We talk about creating defensive events, right? Steals and blocks and just disrupting the offense. You know, and I think that's really what's exciting about what he brings, what he could bring on both ends.
Did you feel like you also, I mean, listen, this is a team that at the time of the draft had, you know, obviously De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, Bogey. There was already backcourt time there. And I think when you and I spoke, you said two things. Basically, one was you want to kind of maintain that timeline and flexibility with De'Aaron Fox and his timeline. But then also, which a lot of fans were really happy to hear, best player available. That this was your philosophy was really with the where you're trying to go and where the Kings are now, best player available. So was it less fit, although I'm sure that factored, and more best player available? What was the thought process going in when you found somebody that was already going to be part of that backcourt?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, best player available is certainly our kind of leading driver of what we're looking to do in the draft, especially, you know, when you're talking about younger players, you know, players with a little more upside who also – you know, you hope are with you for a long time. And so you don't necessarily know what your team will look like, you know, down the road. And so you just want to take the best talent and hope they can fit in. I think we were lucky in Tyrese's case that he was also, in a lot of ways, a perfect match for how we want to play. I think he played on one of the faster teams in the country. You know, he was this year kind of the driving force behind their offense. And like I said already, like his versatility on defense, really ties into how we want to play. So we were lucky there, but yeah, we ultimately want, first and foremost talent. I mean, that doesn't mean we don't factor in other things, but sure. That's kind of the baseline that we start from and really try to stick to that as much as we can.
I wanted to kick around a philosophy question with you. We've been kind of going back and forth for a while now because of the pandemic and the way it's changed so many things. The philosophy we've kind of adopted is that this draft may turn out 4 or 5 years down the road, if that long, to be a draft where, oh my goodness, there were a lot of players picked all over the place that ended up being all-stars. Generally, you know, it's your higher picks. But in this draft, because of the goofy scouting, the lack of a college basketball season, in-person workouts for the most part, that this was going to be a draft that really, really relied a lot on numbers, eye tests, a lot of things that maybe you wouldn't have relied as strongly on in the past. To you, is there anything to that? Are we overthinking that a bit? Or do you think this draft is going to see stars come from all over the place?
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, you know, it was actually a pretty normal draft year in the fact that we got most of the season of the college season done. Most of our scouts were able to see all the guys live. And then, you know, if anything, you just had more time to watch video and things like that. Obviously, the virtual combine and some of those things as you got closer to the draft were different. But I do think, yeah, it was for whatever reason, it was a little bit of a different draft. You know, certainly you just look at the very top, right? You got one guy who played, I think, 3 or 4 games in college and another who played less than 10 overseas. And that in and of itself makes it tougher to evaluate guys. But yeah, it did seem like a draft where the divergence of teams' opinions started earlier. And I think that could mean that you certainly could, you know, could see some stars or really good players go later in the draft. And, you know, in our case, hopefully – hopefully we found three of them. It's one of those things you never know. But I do agree there could be a little bit of a uniqueness to this draft down the line.
And as Monty McNair joins us, one more quick philosophy question for you. And forgive me, I just like picking your brain. And a lot of the dumb ideas we throw around on the show, it's nice to talk to somebody who, you know, knows what they're talking about. My parents went to Florida State University. I am a diehard FSU fan, and I've watched, I promise you, probably more FSU basketball than most people you'd know. And there were a couple of FSU kids in the draft, one of which was kind of maybe right around where we were. FSU kids worry me, and it has nothing to do with the kid. Leonard Hamilton is, to me, one of the best college coaches in the United States. And he gets the most out of the least year after year after year. But he also has a very specific system he runs in, a very specific system. He's got the big guy down low, ton of wings, speedy guard. And when you look at the history of Florida State draftees, with the exception of maybe Jonathan Isaac, who's had a ton of injuries, it's not fair to him. What they do in college does not always translate to pros. I'm not going to ask you about specific draft picks there. It wouldn't be fair. But I am curious, when you're scouting, when you're looking at numbers, do you factor in at all the system that the coach runs and the history of players that come out of that system as kind of a way to either see through to hidden talent or maybe to dull some of the hype coming out about talent because of their numbers? Does that factor in at all, or is that just noise to you?
Well, at the very beginning, thanks for at least pretending that I know what I'm talking about.
I hope so.
I will give credit to our group. You know, they do a great job, but that's a great question. And I think one that maybe is a misconception of how quote unquote analytics are used, that it's just a spreadsheet of numbers and we take the guy on top after we sort. So much of it is the context, like you said, and that's where really we rely so heavily on our scouts to provide that context, right? So in some level, you know, the limitation of your scouts is that they can't watch the 5,000 games that go on in college every year, whatever the number is. And the limitation of the numbers is that they can see all 5,000 games, but at a very, very superficial level. And so it's all about merging those two together. And you talk about FSU, you talk about the Syracuse zone, you talk about certain coaches that you know, play fast or play slow or are ball dominant, you know, defensively, like press or trap, all these things that can distort the numbers. And so it's really a back and forth. And that's a huge part of our draft process and trying to find the truth. And when we have certain numbers and we have what our scouts' eyes are seeing and trying to figure out where the discrepancies lie and why they exist, you know, I think that's really the secret sauce. And that's what hopefully makes the best decisions. But you absolutely need that. Otherwise, if you're just looking at one or the other, I think you're flying blind a little bit.
Monty McNair with us as we begin to wrap up here. Monty, I'm just going to head fake to the potential deal you had with a certain Eastern Conference team because I don't know what's going on there and I don't want to cost anybody any money. But I want to ask you overall about Bogdan Bogdanovic as well. You know, we can get into specifics all day, keep him, let him go. Obviously, there was a want to flip him for assets. But at the same time, what I tried to do on the show, at least, and what a lot of fans have talked about and written about on the various sites was that it's a little bit, it's not, no, nobody has a, nobody can collects NBA cards with cap flexibility as the player. It's nobody has a poster on their wall with cap flexibility in an action shot. But for somebody sitting in your position, although on the surface it looks like a player left with nothing in return per se, how important is it to the overall chessboard for you to maintain that flexibility? And do you consider that maybe as much as an asset as certain roster positions? In fact,
yeah, no, we certainly looked at all our options. Bogdan's a great player. I think all Kings fans know and saw that, and we obviously wish him the best of luck, especially when he plays the 28 other teams in the league. But, yeah, I think he's certainly you know, a great and versatile player. For us, it came down to, you know, ultimately our decision was on an offer sheet, to match or not. And, you know, we had almost 72 hours or so to kind of dig in and really look at it. And we kind of looked at it from every angle. There's a lot that goes into that. And like you said, ultimately we came back to, you know, the flexibility that this gives us. And I know, like you said, yeah, there's no posters on the wall for cap flexibility, but eventually we can turn that into players, into talent. And that's our goal. And the question was, do we think that, that flexibility gives us the chance to make the team even better in the future? And ultimately that was the decision we made. And, you know, like I talked about, I think the first time I was on, we don't know when all these opportunities are going to come up. But we need to put ourselves in the best position to capitalize when they do. And we all hope it's sooner rather than later. But there's no shortcuts. We can't force it. All you can do is be prepared. You know, I don't want to keep pointing back to Houston, but that's unfortunately the only team I've been on in the past. And sure. we didn't know it was going to be James Harden when we made that trade a lot. But we in the position that we could we had the assets, we had the flexibility, we had the players under contract whenever that big trade came up. And, you know, our goal here is those same situations and be able to capitalize when the time comes. And that's what ultimately led to our decision there.
I used a sloppy metaphor on the show when talking about, you know, grade the move. But the idea was it's almost impossible to grade that move. It would be like grading a chess match five moves in. Somebody loses their knight and you grade it. Well, maybe that set up something down the road. Is that accurate? This is not a completed picture yet when it comes to transactions like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think and it almost never will be. Right. You know, it's just about, are you, you know, can you put yourself in a better spot, ultimately down the road? And I think, like I talked about the first time we were on here, like, you know, our goal, I know Kings fans are itching for a playoff team, and it's been a long time, and you know, we certainly feel that. But our goal is sustained winning and sustained success, and you know, we don't want to compromise that you know, until the time is ready. And so, you know, ultimately that's the lens at which we look through all these decisions. And like you said, it's not a finished product. Like, you know, there's still the ability to sign and trade for players all the way through the trade deadline and even after for signing. So we're constantly looking, and this year I think could be even crazier than most in the types of opportunities that come up and the depth and things that you need. And so, you know, this allows us to be really opportunistic, you know, as those things present themselves down the line.
That was nice. Coming up next.
Ed Crane's here for the final time with your news and information, plus Dave's conclusion of the interview with Monty McNair. Stick around.
Here's your bottom of the hour news and information update with Ed Crane.
Good morning. Some have said he won't run again because he couldn't bear losing twice. But reports are that Donald Trump is telling aides he wants to take another crack at the White House in 2024. He could make that sentiment public on or before Inauguration Day. That announcement would be, by definition, a concession. Stocks are rolling this morning. The Dow up close to 400 points after its best month since 1987 in November. With corona hospitalizations nearly doubling over 2 weeks, the governor is considering another stay-at-home order. It could be issued county by county in the coming weeks. Ann Edwards, who had been directing Sacramento County's Human Assistance Department, has been named the temporary county executive. She'll run things while suspended county exec Nav Gill is investigated for allegations of racism, sexism, and flaunting COVID-19 protocols, among other things. That's the information you need. I'm Ed Crane. He's Carmichael Dave.
Yeah, you know, this is what I hate about trying to be an investor in stocks. Is it the Dow's up like 3-something, like you said, but sure does depend on the stocks you own. I'm looking at my thing right now, and my stocks are down, well, 12 bucks. I don't have a lot in there, but, you know, Palantir, Blink, and DraftKings are all down big today. And I got a lot of...
I can see DraftKings because nobody knows what the hell's going on in the NFL with all this corona stuff.
I know. I don't get it. I don't know. You just throw money in there if you have it and just... Somebody smart told me, said, just put the money in, just don't watch it. Just look at it like once a year. I can't do
that. Yeah, or buy index funds, you know, buy the whole market. If the market's up 10 points or 10%, you're up 10%.
That's what I heard yesterday. The big news was Tesla is being added. It's the largest valued company in the history of the S&P 500, and they were going to stagger it and add, like, part of it on and then the other part of it on. Now, I think it's like December 12th or something, they're going to add the whole freaking thing, and everyone's freaking out about that. So,
well, if you go back in time and you look at where the Dow was in 1929, the crash, I mean, I think it was less than 100 points. Crazy.
Yeah, not anymore. Big time. Ed, ink isn't even dry on the check. I'm putting it in the envelope, and I am mailing it to you right now.
I appreciate that very much. So much so that I'll be back tomorrow.
Thank you, Ed. We'll talk to you at 6 a.m. Take care. Have a good day. That's Ed Crane. Let's continue. Right, am I throwing to it? Here is part two of our visit with Kings GM Monty McNair.
Monty McNair with us. Monty, we're going to have a national guy, a national writer on tomorrow. And one of the things he said today was, maybe it was yesterday, he said that the most shocking move of the offseason was not the Gordon Hayward sign and trade. The most shocking move of the offseason was the Sacramento Kings getting Glenn Robinson III, who had offers from other teams, apparently including the Lakers and Clippers, to join the Kings. And not only join the Kings, but join on the contract that he joined. When you're talking, because I want to move on to Hassan Whiteside in a second too, but when you're talking to a guy like Glenn Robinson, who obviously has suitors, really, it's as much as you're willing to share, what's the pitch to somebody like that? And obviously, that pitch worked really well.
Yeah. So unfortunately, can't talk specifically about Glenn yet, as we haven't formally announced. But
gotcha.
But what I can say is, and I think it applies to some of the other guys that we signed, and what we're seeing is. I think De'Aaron and Marvin and Buddy and Harrison, all these guys, I think players see the talent, and then I think they also see the opportunity to get into a system that Luke and now Coach Gentry and Coach Rex Kalamian are implementing, and they like that vision. And I think they see that's the way the NBA is going, and hopefully we'll be at the forefront of that. And so I think that's where we've had success, and hopefully we can continue to prove that on the floor and capitalize on that in future transactions where guys want to come and play here, and it's exciting to see that already bearing fruit.
Well, faux pas on my part. I've been in the business long enough. That's right. Monty can't speak on specifics until they're signed. One guy I know was announced was Hassan Whiteside, originally drafted by Sacramento in the DeMarcus Cousins draft, I think back in 2010. And boys, he had a road, played in Lebanon at one point, comes back. Obviously, he's had a career in Miami, Portland, et cetera. The Kings fans know Hassan Whiteside pretty well just from when he was drafted and then continuing to follow that career. And there's the highs and the lows with Hassan, but here's the bottom line. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think it was something like 15.5 points, 13.5 boards, and a league leading 2.9 blocks. And you got him on a 1-year minimum deal. That on the surface is an absolute steal of a contract to bring in a guy who I presume will be a backup. Who knows? But on that type of deal. So again, I assume that philosophy we just talked about factors in there when you're pitching guys to come to Sacramento. In the past, not a lot of luck getting guys like that to land here. But again, obviously it worked for him.
Yeah, and I think that's, Hassan, I think is obviously an incredible talent and is, both in Miami and Portland kind of shown what he can do. And so we were, I think lucky that he fell to that. To that spot, and he brings something that every team's looking for, right? Rim protection, the ability to rebound the ball on both ends, finish at the rim. I mean, that we always talk about versatility within a player, but really it's versatility within your whole roster and the optionality that it provides. And on a night in, night out basis, it just gives Luke, it's going to be really hard for a team to be too big for us when you have Hassan on the bench. And so, the ability to kind of plug him in. And I think the other thing that I've talked about with him is when you have a rim protector like that, it's not just that he blocks shots when guys get to the rim. It gives the rest of your defense the ability to, like, be more aggressive on the perimeter, to feel like they can get up into a guy because you know, they have that guy behind them. And so I think it just makes the rest of your defense better and more aggressive, which we want to be as well.
Which leads to my last question. I've gotten to know Luke over the last couple of years. Great dude. Obviously, he's got a ton of challenges this year. And you coming in here so quickly, I'm curious, and I'll give you the part B of the question after your answer. With the whirlwind and tornado we've talked about, have you had much of a chance, really, we don't know, to kind of mind meld with Luke and the staff, get on that page and really get that kind of organizational philosophy that's going to spill over onto the floor? Have you had much of a chance to be able to do that yet?
Yeah, no, it's been great, actually. We've had a lot of time to, you know, in between all the craziness of the offseason, to really just sit down and talk a little bit, both about the roster and how we want to play. And, you know, I think we're really aligned. And I think the other big part of that is I've talked, you know, about the staff that I was able to bring in to support me, and you're only as good as the people around you. And, I think Luke thinks the same thing, and we're really excited about, the new faces joining the old faces on the coaching staff, mm-hmm. and what they're going to be able to implement. I mean, for Alvin, you know, a long history of success as both a head and assistant coach, especially with the style of play we want. And Rex has been on many fantastic teams and captained some really good defenses. And the energy that he brings, I hope will be infectious to our players, because that's how we want to play on the floor. So I think, you know, we've had a lot of time to talk. We'll have even more coming in to training camp here in a few days. And so we're excited to actually see all the stuff get implemented onto the floor.
All right, which leads to my last question, which really feeds off of that, Monty. When you read about some of the signings, and Kings fans, I think you figured out, are pretty savvy, and also, although so impatient, because we want to get in the playoffs, also understanding. I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but from my perspective, I think from most Kings fans' perspective, we're not being a playoff contender this year. This is we're building, as you said, slow and steady. And I think as long as there's a plan and it's apparent that it's being followed, Kings fans are very, very patient and very on board for the most part. When we see signings like that, let's take Hassan, for example, a guy who obviously has those numbers, or anybody else, for example. I imagine there's some sort of philosophy there in some room somewhere between coaching staff and front office, between obviously they're going to go out and want to win every single game. Players don't tank, coaches don't tank, nobody's tanking, okay? Everyone wants to win every single game possible. But then there's also that we need to get this young guy in this position to understand how to win in this position down the road. How much of a juggle is it for you and for the coaching staff to be on that same page, understanding we want to win every single game, but we also want to develop our youth and make sure that those minutes being used in, for example, clutch situations are minutes that are not only going to benefit us in the fourth quarter of this specific game, but are going to benefit us next year and the year after with the players that are, again, on that De'Aaron Fox timeline that seems to be kind of the run-through for the whole organization. How do you juggle that?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, you know, you need to establish your winning foundation, you know, regardless of your timeline. And so, you know, we need to compete, you know, really hard every night. That's, you know, you can't win this league without that. We need to lay the groundwork for our offensive and defensive schemes. All these winning habits is step one. And we need to do that regardless of you know, where we are in our timeline. Well, even veteran players to develop, the guys develop by, you know, by being competitive and being in games. And it's, you know, it's not just minutes. You can't just be out there for minutes. And so we need a mixture of guys who are, you know, both like stylistically as well as, you know, age related, all those things. And so for our guys to develop, we need to have, you know, proven winners around them. We need guys who can complement their skill set. And really, it's just about getting all those pieces together, laying that groundwork, and then, you know, the winning will eventually follow. That's, you know, I think that's how we look at it.
That is Kings General Manager Monty McNair. Obviously, he's been very busy, and in the middle of all of that, He gives us way too much time. One of these days, you know, you can always say, you're not going to offend me. You can always say, Monty, dude, you're asking too many questions. Shut up. I got to go. You're always very kind with your time, and we appreciate you joining us.
No, I'm excited. Thanks for having me on, as always.
That was nice. Coming up next.
All right, our thanks to Monty McNair, GM of the Kings. If you missed some or all of that or just want to hear it again, you can go to KHDK.com. They'll have the recap of all that, the podcast. Also on KHDK's Twitter account, everything archived on Periscope as well. We'll tweet that out a bit later. But coming up next, we got a lot to pack in to this final segment. Once in a Blue Moon, What's on Tap, and a crossover all right after this.
Yeah, let's go. Come on. What you need to know, what you need to watch, what you need to follow today. It's What's on Tap, brought to you by
radio hosts that leave their microphones on.
Oh. I was listening. Somebody put on Twitter one of those televangelists that's like, I'm done with you, COVID-19. And they put a metal guitar riff underneath it. It was pretty awesome, but I didn't know my mic was on. So
I'm in the other room, and I'm hearing something. I'm like, what the hell is that noise? Sure enough.
No football tonight. You got to wait for Wednesday night football. But you know what? There is some college basketball. And my goodness, there's really some college basketball. Number 4, Ohio State takes on Michigan State. Number 5, Texas A&M and Auburn. That's starting at 9 a.m. I mean, it is a full day. Number 17, Texas and Kansas State, North Carolina. These are all 9 a.m. games, folks. And then the big games of the day, number 12, Indiana. Number 16, Wisconsin. Big Ten battle there at 12:30. And then where is it? Because I know what's happening today. Where are you? Oh, wait. Hey. God, I just had a guy on the text line, too, telling me how terrible I was. That's college football this weekend.
That's an evergreen text, by the way.
That's why it's all at 9 a.m. because I was reading the college.
Yeah, it's fine.
He's completely right. 6:30 tonight, Kansas takes on Kentucky. Number 7 versus number 20. Michigan State Duke at 4:30. I was right what I said. There is a lot of cool college basketball today. I was just reading you. Number 4, Wisconsin. Number 9, Creighton. Number 12, Villanova. Number 14, North Carolina. And number 17, Texas. All in action, but that Kansas-Kentucky game. Yep. By the way, this just in about Kentucky, who lost to Creighton the other day. Richmond, the Spiders. Never count out the Spiders. Have we all gotten used to the fact that Kentucky always starts out crappy?
Yes.
Because they're bringing in a bunch of 12-year-olds mm-hmm. that are going to be number one picks in the draft. Yes. And then by the end of the year, they're badass.
They'll have some guy on their bench that comes out and becomes an NBA All-Star, a la Devin Booker.
Yep. Yeah, John Calipari knows what he's doing. So 4:30, number 8, Michigan State, number 6, Duke at Cameron Indoor, and then number 7, Kansas and Kentucky. That game's in Indianapolis. That is at 6:30. So that is what's on tap.
Full day of college hoops. If you're into the hoopers of the college.
Check me out, though. I was like, all these games are starting at 9 a.m. That's crazy.
Dude, it's like March Madness in December.
All right, let's get to it. It is Once in a Blue Moon.
Once in a Blue Moon, brought to you by Blue Moon Beer. Here's Jay Mars.
On this date, in 1996, Wayne Gretzky became the first and only player in NHL history to reach the 3,000-point plateau, including playoffs. He would finish his career with 2,857 regular season points and 260 in the playoffs, good for 3,117 total points. Wayne did that as a member? New York Rangers.
Really?
I think people forget his Rangers tenure at the end of his career.
I'm going to say this, and I'm not a hockey guy, so I don't want hockey people to call up and text and be like, oh, you know what you're talking about. Stick to, you know, whatever. I know this hasn't really been said much, but I'm going to say it.
Okay.
I think Wayne Gretzky is the best hockey player ever.
Are you sure?
You know.
Is this the part where I just list the hockey players that I know and say, oh, you know, might not be as good as Luke Robitaille.
Better Mark
Messier. No, Joe Thornton.
Mark Messier.
I don't know, man.
Hey, wait, hold on.
Oh. Messier got the Rangers the World, or I was going to say World Series, Stanley Cup.
How long?
I knew that.
we don't have time to do this now, but you know what would be kind of a fun thing to do? And don't study. You know what would be kind of a fun little segment would be to see how many hockey players we could throw back at each other until we ran. Like, how many minutes do you think we could go before one of us got got stumped. Where
without
you,
studying?
Without studying, like two minutes? And any hockey player ever.
Over under two on 2 minutes?
I mean, 2 minutes is actually a long time if you're just going back and forth. Like, no more than 2 to 3 seconds in between answers.
Hmm.
I think we could go over 2 minutes. And I think we should do this tomorrow.
Okay.
I think tomorrow at some point during the show, we as sports hosts should go back and forth with every...
No studying, though.
No, no computers
no
up.
One's cheating. No, don't look tonight
honor
either.
Honor system. Honor system. Absolute honor system. Otherwise, this exercise doesn't work. How many of any hockey player ever? Ron Hextall. I mean, I can go with my old Edmonton Oilers days.
Do guys that were hockey players in movies count?
No, you cannot go with Youngblood or
Mighty
Recky.
Ducks.
Yeah, no. These,
damn it.
And the sad thing is that it has to also super be on the honor system, too, because you could throw out, like, Pierre Washington, and I wouldn't know if that was a hockey player. I would just assume it was. So we're going to
need... Because his name's Pierre.
We're going to need, like, people in the audience that know hockey to judge and make sure nobody's trying any shenanigans.
Patrick in the YouTube chat, you're my hockey... He's our fact checker.
Okay.
So we're going to need Patrick available tomorrow for that segment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do we have left? Oh, we have a crossover. Let's get to that right now with Doug and Jason.
What's happening with Jason Ross and Doug Christie?
Hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
Let's find out right now with the crossover. Here's today's crossover.
Today on the crossover, Doug.
Yes.
Looking back to the weekend, they had a couple legends in the ring with Tyson and Jones.
Yes, getting after it, no doubt. And if that is good, is that going to be a thing?
I think they want to make it a thing.
Okay, gentlemen. So if it is a thing, who are the next two legends that you would like to see lace them up and duke it out?
And judges, get it right this time.
Please.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Or is this where you put all the caveats on it?
There's no caveats.
Okay.
I thought Saturday night was fun. But Saturday night was fun because of the Jake Paul Nate Robinson fight. Saturday night was fun because of the commentary, the Snoop Dogg concert, and the spectacle of seeing Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. in there. Let's make no mistake about it. These were two old guys who would beat the hell out of us that were absolute shells of who they were. I applaud the effort. I applaud the training. I applaud the skill level still there. But I personally, I don't want a part of this. Not in MMA and not in boxing. You can call me the get off my lawn guy. I don't want to see my memories of Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr., of Oscar De La Hoya, Felix Trinidad. This isn't old timers baseball or basketball.
No, it's old timers boxing.
Right, where the point is to concuss your opponent so much that they fall down on the ground. To hit them repeatedly in the head so much that they fall down on the ground. And not only that, but let's not make something out of it that wasn't. These were two old guys completely past their prime, over 50 years old, especially in Roy Jones Jr., that were hugging each other for half the fight.
Because no, Roy Jones Jr. was hugging. Hey.
I hear you.
Mike Tyson is not Mike Tyson. Duh.
Right.
Mike Tyson was very entertaining and boxed very well for 54 years old.
But you have to have two to tango, and Roy did all he could do. Roy did the smart thing. But it was a spectacle. I was not entertained by the boxing itself.
So do you think there is a good boxing match out there for two old-timers? Because, again, we saw Mike Tyson can still box. Again, you're not getting Kid Dynamite.
Right.
But you're getting a guy that is a very competent boxer at 54 years old. Like, would Lennox Lewis, if he were to get in shape, still be able to have a competent fight with Mike Tyson?
But here's the thing, though, I can't get past. Maybe. But here's the thing I can't get past. When the older you get, the weaker you get, the more susceptible you get. It's one thing to see these guys contribute to giving each other Parkinson's and CTE.
What if they wear headgear?
But then when they wear headgear, listen, let's be honest. We're all looking for Nate Robinson hitting the deck. That's entertainment. You watch for the crashes.
That's not what I was watching for Tyson.
I think most people were watching to look for Tyson to knock Roy Jones Jr. through the ropes.
Can you answer the question now?
What?
Which fight would you like to see?
I don't want that's my answer, but I wanted to
pick a fight.
I don't want to see a fight. I don't want old timers boxing. I'm not here for it, dude. I'm here for celebrity boxing. Fine. Go ahead. Jake Paul, Nate Robinson all day long. Let's put some other celebrities up and let them throw at it. Let's put amateurs up.
Mike Tyson's a celebrity.
I'm not here to watch guys who've been concussed their whole lives, concuss themselves again, and then we're gonna see I mean this with all respect. I'm being serious. I mean this with all respect. I don't want to see Mike Tyson be Muhammad Ali in 15 years. I don't want to see Mike Tyson and all these guys shaking. And my grandfather died of Parkinson's. It's a very close thing to me. I'm not trying to get too crazy serious, but I don't want to see
You're
that.
You're not?
I mean, I am, I guess. But in real talk, I don't want – you've done your time. You've made your major living. Now, please move on. I want to see Mike Tyson talk to pigeons. I want to see him star in a reality show. I want to see
healthy.
I want to see Mike Tyson painting. I don't know. I don't want to see these guys that I grew up watching and rooting for. I don't want to see them fumbling around and bumbling. They're already gonna to a level. I don't need to see Anderson Silva and Forrest Griffin rolling around at 68 years old with CTE and or Parkinson's. I just, you know, that's just me. Who would you want to see? Now that I've crapped all over the question.
Yeah, nobody really. But if I had to pick.
You had to pick.
I would look for guys that are more in like their 40s. Someone like a Delahoye. Delahoye is still in his 40s, right? Late 40s now?
I think.
And I know he wants to fight like for real again, and I don't think that should happen. But I'd like to see Delahoye. Yeah, let's see Delahoye Trinidad again. Why not? I think Delahoye Jones would be fine if they could meet at a catch weight. I think there's fights that can be made there where guys aren't going to seriously hurt themselves. But I'm not. I was there for the spectacle of seeing Mike Tyson again. Mike Tyson is my all-time favorite fighter. Might be my all-time favorite athlete. I was not going to pass up. I was happy to watch that he can still move and throw. He looked good for 54. I was happy to see it. I don't need to see it again.
Somebody wants to see me fight Softy up in Seattle.
You'd win.
All right, Jason and Doug, question of the day. With the NFL starting on Thursday, going to Wednesday, would you be cool if they could work it out in the schedule, having an NFL game every day of the week, if they could work it out? For Jay, I'm Dave. Jim Rome is next. Bye-bye now.